The third principle of manifestation is called honoring your worthiness to receive. So we've talked about understanding that not only that you have a higher self, but that it is the part of you that wants to be at peace. And then the second aspect of it is to learn to trust in your divine inner wisdom, to trust it so strongly that you have banished all doubt. And now we're talking about honoring your worthiness to receive it. And the affirmation for this principle of manifestation is, I deserve to experience divine abundance, for I am a part of God. And of course, the universe is abundant. It is endless. This intelligence that I've been speaking about is endless and abundant. And you, therefore, also are abundant and are deserving of that abundance. But there's a lot of stuff that has come your way that has worked to convince you that this isn't true. And what I want to do here in this principle is to help you to recognize not only your own divinity, but that whatever comes your way, you are entitled to. And that there's nothing selfish about having a desire. This idea that somehow there's an incompatibility with desiring abundance in your life or desiring healing or desiring anything in your life. You know, you can't create without a desire. You can't have anything without a desire. Even the desire to be desireless is a desire. And this idea that we don't have desires is really almost, it's a hallucination. It's a myth that somehow I shouldn't be wanting things. You are a part of the endlessness and the abundance of this divine universe. And you are not incompatible with prosperity and joy and wealth and fulfillment. This is something that you not only can ask for, but are entitled to. And you must know that. Someone mailed this to me that I thought I'd share this with you. It's called I Am Lost. It says, a woman is dying of AIDS. A priest is summoned. He attempts to comfort her, but to no avail. I am lost, she said. I have ruined my life and every life around me. Now I'm going painfully to hell. There's no hope for me. The priest saw a framed picture of a pretty girl on the dresser. Who is this? He asked. The woman brightened. She is my daughter, the one beautiful thing in my life. And would you help her if she was in trouble or made a mistake? Would you forgive her? Would you still love her? Of course I would, cried the woman. I would do anything for her. Why do you ask such a question? Because I want you to know, said the priest, that God has a picture of you on his dresser. And I think that picturing ourselves this way, with all of the problems that we have had, the things that we feel bad about, the mistakes that we may have made, the people that we may have hurt, all of these kinds of things have a tendency to make us feel unworthy. There's a lot of people who think, you know, I'm going to be able to manifest what I want in my life as soon as I am no longer an addict, or as soon as I am no longer fat, or as soon as I remove all of these problems I have in this relationship. When I get rid of all of this, when this all goes, then I will feel worthy. And it's almost like you have to shift that consciousness around and come at it from a different perspective, which says, I love myself while I am fat. I love myself while I'm an addict. I love myself regardless of what it is that I may have seen as something that I shouldn't be, that God does have a picture of me on his dresser, is the metaphor as well. And what it does is it fills you with this kind of unconditional love that I'll be talking about a little bit later in one of the later principles. But you begin to say, yes, I am worthy. And I'll tell you when you feel most worthy of what it is that you would like to be able to manifest. You see, if you feel unworthy, what you do is you block the flow. And remember, there's an energy. There's a flowing of energy in everything. That's what manifesting is. And the idea that somehow I shouldn't have this or there's something wrong with it immediately puts you into a feeling or a space of being separate from this thing that you want to manifest. It's like you put up that blockage. Someone asked the question, does God have this for me? Does God want that for me? And almost always when we ask that question, we make an assumption. We're coming from that ego assumption that God and I are separate. And the same thing is true when you're feeling unworthy. What you're really saying is that God has made a mistake here. And there are no mistakes. And this divine intelligence is everywhere. And it's a theme that will run through this entire program. This idea that what I want to manifest has the same divine intelligence in it that is in me and that is in everything. So I'm realigning myself. But you can't realign yourself if you feel like what you would like to have come to you, that you aren't worthy of it. You have to know that you are as worthy of anything showing up in your life as anyone else is on the planet. The essence of this is that you have to be at peace. And being at peace is what enlightenment is. As my teacher told me, enlightenment is being immersed in and surrounded by peace. That's the definition of enlightenment. And it is also what the higher intelligence or the sacred part of you or the higher self always wants. It just wants you to be at peace. Nothing else. It's not asking anymore. When you feel unworthy, you're not at peace. The ego has taken over this idea somehow that you have certain obligations, you have to behave in certain ways, you have to fulfill the obligations of your conditioning or of the tribe. That's what starts to take over, and you've got to let go of that. I recently appeared down in Australia with one of my friends, John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, and he's got us on different planets and all of this. And it's a wonderful guy. We had a great time down there. And I was asked to talk about relationships and to write an article. So I wrote an article that I really liked. I called it, Your Soulmate is the Person You Can't Stand. And everybody thought, wow, what kind of a crazy thing is that to say? Because most people, when they talk about they're looking for their soulmate, you know, I finally found my soulmate, and we think alike, and we act alike, and we both like green, and asparagus is our favorite vegetable, and he goes to say something, and before he can even say it, I say it already. Oh my God, we think the same thoughts, and we get up early in the morning, and we both like to meditate, and we both like yoga, and we both eat mushrooms, and we eat them the same way, and he cuts the stems off the same way I cut the stems off. It's just amazing. This is my soulmate. And I always say to those people, you got about 3 more weeks, okay, in this relationship. And this relationship's going to be over because this is not your soulmate, okay? I mean, who needs more of what you already are, right? That you're not looking for a mirror of yourself, if you will. Now, we have a tendency to think that. What do we share in common, all right? And then if we're in common, then I'm going to have a peaceful relationship because we're going to always think the same and act the same and so on. That isn't the way it generally works. See, the reason I say your soulmate is the person you can't stand, and I say that a bit facetiously, but what I'm saying here is that peace, being at peace, is the essence of feeling worthy. It's the essence of manifesting. It's the essence of enlightenment, being at peace. Any moment that you're at peace, you're in an enlightened state. And when people ask, is there a difference between people who are living at a higher level, self-actualizing people, who are at peace, and the rest of us who are not at peace, say, no, we all have peaceful thoughts, and so do enlightened people. They have peaceful thoughts. The only difference is that they have nothing else. That's all they have. They don't have all of this other stuff that goes with it. All of the anger, all of the judgment, all of the fears, all of the anxiety, the stuff that we have come to believe is just a part of our lives. The self-reproachment, the self-repudiation. We have a tendency to think that this is normal. It's only normal. So along come people in your life who know how to push certain buttons, okay? These people can come in many forms. They can come as in-laws. They can often come, almost always they come as a spouse. And they can come as your children. And when these people show up in your life, they can take you away from your peace. Almost all of us have somebody in our life that we can never get rid of. You know, it's like Kevin Costner talked about in that Waterworld movie of his, you know, they're like a turd that won't flush, you know? You keep flushing, you look at that, still there. If that's a good image or not, but I always liked that image, you know? You keep trying and trying, they're back again, right? So we have these people in our lives. And these people show up and they say something in a certain way, and it doesn't make any difference. If somebody else said it, we would just ignore it. All right? But they come along and they say this thing, and boom, off you go. And you're frantic, and you're mad, and you're angry, you're upset, you're worked up, you're feeling unworthy. So these people, to me, are your soulmates, you see. Because what they're teaching you at any given moment in your life is you haven't mastered yourself at this moment. You're not in charge of yourself. Those people who can push your buttons and send you into a frenzy or into an angry space or into a space of self-repudiation are people who are divine masters disguised as manipulative, crass, unconcerned people. And rather than being mad at them and being upset with them and saying that they shouldn't be this way, your task ought to be to turn to them and bow and say, I honor you as my teacher. Now that's a hard thing for us to get to, but don't you all have people in your life who are just like that? And you know you're stuck with them. These are people who are not on your path. You know they're not on your path. They're not even on an entrance ramp to your path. They're in a different place. They're from a different planet. But nevertheless, they're there with you. And you're sharing the journey with them. And it's very interesting. I mean, I have 8 children. And my children are the ones that are very good at knowing how to push these buttons. I have one daughter particularly, her name is Serena, that can really do this very well. She's real good at it. She's always giving me advice almost every day on how to be a better parent. She even said to me one time, she said, I can't believe you actually wrote a book on how to be a better parent. I just can't believe that. She was about 9 years old telling me this. You really wrote that? And whenever she gives me this advice, it's like, or she starts going into one of her routines, I find myself, really being challenged. I don't usually turn around and say, I honor you for... I'm usually saying, well, yeah. But nevertheless, there's a part of me that recognizes this, and I also recognize it in my relationship with my wife. And we've been together for a long time, and there are areas where she will say something and I will find myself, and then I'll stop. You see, because essentially, the ego part of us wants us to be right, whereas the higher part of us always wants what? Peace. That's all it ever wants. So it's like you have to really learn, if you're going to feel worthy of having something show up in your life, how to be peaceful. And the way to be peaceful in your life is to, in all of your relationships, when you have a choice to be right or to be kind, to just pick kind, to just choose to be kind at any given moment in your life. You are honoring that higher part of you, you feel peaceful, and you've let go of the ego need, which says, wait a minute, you're important. And you have to prove that this other person shouldn't have done that and all of that kind of stuff. But Serena, yeah, I remember her telling me, she's great. She would tell me, giving me advice on how to be a parent. And one day I just had it with her. And I said, Serena, I said, it's time for you to stop telling me what kind of a parent to be and stop blaming me for the kind of parent I am and take responsibility yourself for the kind of parent that I am. And she stopped, and she assumed this pose that she always assumes with her hand on her hip, and her knee going up and down real fast. And she said, you want to run that one by me one more time? You want me? Is that what I heard? You want me to be responsible for the kind of parent you are? I said, exactly. She said, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, before you came here, you had a choice. You have certain heroic missions that you have to fulfill while you're here on this planet. And I'm giving her this little lecture. She said, well, what do you mean before I came here? She says, I don't remember that. I said, well, your memory isn't anything that you should rely upon to determine whether this works or doesn't work. You don't remember being 4 months old and being in your crib and throwing up all over, but you did. You don't remember your dreams last night. You don't remember what you had for dinner last Thursday. Your memory isn't a good indicator of what it was. Just trust me, this is true. Before you come here, you choose your parents. You get to pick who your parents are. And you have certain lessons that you have to learn, and you picked me to be your father, and you picked mom to be your mother, and you should stop complaining about the choice that you made. She said, I don't remember any of this. I said, well, forget about whether you remember it or not. She said, you're telling me that I chose you, to be my father before I came here. And I had lessons to learn through you. I said, exactly. And you should stop blaming me. You should just take responsibility for the choice you made. She said, I must have been in a big hurry. So, these are your tests, all right? I'll tell you the greatest one, though. I mean, my wife had gone away. She's working on a book herself on a spiritual approach to childbirth and infancy care. And she went away for a month, and I took over Mr. Mom for 30 days while she rented a house on Maui. We live in Florida. She was making sure she wasn't coming home on weekends, like I do. And kids, I mean, they really are your challenge. They are the real ones that challenge your worthiness to receive anything. And I was making breakfast one morning, and they were all sitting over at the table, and I was making waffles. And so I'm at the toaster in the back, and the children are behind me, and all of a sudden I hear my 13-year-old daughter, who is Summer, saying to my 11-year-old, Serena, she asked this question out of the blue. She said, Serena, she said, if you didn't have any feet, would you wear shoes? And I turned around and, what in the world? What kind of a question is that? And Serena looks at her and said, what do you mean if I didn't have any feet, would I wear shoes? She said, of course not. And Summer said to her, well, why are you wearing that bra? So, I'm telling you, they can be tough. So what I would like you to think about when you think about honoring your worthiness to receive anything is that all of the people in your life that you find yourself in conflict with or having a difficult time with, whether they're strangers or spouses or children or grandparents or in-laws or even people who are no longer here on this earth plane, if you can say to yourself, when I have this choice at any given moment to be right or to be kind, and I'm going to let my ego get out of this thing, and I'm going to choose to be at peace. As it says in the Course in Miracles, I can choose peace rather than this at any given moment. And then when you find yourself in these relationships with contentious people, and you find yourself being able to be at peace when they push those buttons, you'll know that the reason that they showed up in your life in the first place is to teach you to honor your own worthiness. That's why you're with them. That's what they're there for. These are teachers, just like you are teachers to others. And you can let go of that ego-driven need to constantly be proving yourself and to make yourself right and to make more than making yourself right, to make them wrong, which is what we often do in this whole business of not honoring that. And it's like my wife and I made that agreement with each other, that we would really work on that, because when you're in a long-term relationship and you've had a lot of children, you're together a lot, there are areas where she's on one path and I'm on another path, and she will say something and I'll find myself upset about it, I'll say something, she'll find herself upset about it. Very often, I didn't even mean to do that. That wasn't my intention to upset her, but she just grabs a hold of it and takes it a certain way, or I will grab a hold of what she says and I'll twist it around inside and make something that will take me away from my peace. And we decided to make a commitment with each other to be more kind in our responses. And not only to do it with each other, and if we feel like we have to say something that puts them down or whatever, to just don't say anything, to just process it in a different way. And then to not only do it with them, but to do it with waitresses and stewardesses and baggage handlers and people on the freeway and, you know, strangers that you meet, to begin to send out and radiate out this kind of peace. And if you want a model for that, of course, the great model for that are the spiritual masters. When Jesus Christ was being crucified and a soldier threw a spear into him, his response was forgive, forgive them, because that's what came out was what was inside. So if you have that inside, you begin to shift to a more peaceful way of being. There are attitudes that each of us have that keep us from honoring our worthiness to receive. I'd like to give just five of them and talk a little bit about each one of them and see if we can shift out of them. The reason that you are honoring your worthiness to receive, remember, is because by not feeling worthy, you are entering into a negative space. That negative space blocks the free flow of what it is that you would like to have show up in your life. Whether it's money, love, prosperity, healing, whatever. You're saying, here I am here, over here, and to my right, I know what I want. I'd like to be able to manifest that. I'm practicing the meditation. I'm doing all the right things. But right in between what I want to manifest and what is out there for me to manifest is this huge obstacle. And that obstacle is, I don't feel that I deserve it. And the minute that you don't feel that you deserve it, as you think, so shall you be, you inhibit it from flowing into your life. This divine intelligence works like this. It will cooperate with you, but it will not cooperate with you if you feel that you're not worthy of its cooperation. So here are five attitudes that I believe that we need to cultivate. The first of these is, I am a human being expressing God without reservation. This is an attitude that says, who I am is particular, is individual, but I am expressing God. And therefore, I am honorable, I am worthy, I count, and I shouldn't be thinking of myself as something that is less than valuable. That's the first. The second is, I accept myself without complaint. I have a slogan that I use in my own life. It says, whenever I hear my children complaining or other people and they ask me for advice, I always say, don't complain, don't explain. Don't complain, don't explain. I accept myself without complaint. I look at the body that I'm in, and I understand that this is nothing more than my curriculum to God. There are things about it that if I were to be designing it myself, perhaps I would have done a little differently. I might have put a little extra hair on the top. I might have made myself a little taller. I might have made myself a little darker. I might have made my eyes a different color, whatever it is. But that isn't up to me. Because who I am is not this thing that I occupy. This is just a garage where I park my soul. And it doesn't matter. It is my curriculum to God. And whether it can see or can't see, whether it's in a wheelchair, whether it's 4'1" or 7'3", whether it's dark or white, whether it's living on the plains of the Kalahari, or whether it's living in New Guinea, or in Detroit, or Chicago, it doesn't make any difference. I accept myself without complaint. This is what I showed up in. And not only do I accept myself without complaint, but I accept life without complaining. And all of us have that choice, and we don't listen to that inner voice. That inner voice, I've often said that if prayer is you talking to God, then your intuition is God talking to you. And that intuition is something you want to listen to. And complaining about anything in your world, particularly about yourself, is a way of blocking the free flow of the divine intelligence that is everywhere and wants to be delivering abundance into your life. The third is, and this is a hard one for people, is I take full responsibility for my life. I take full responsibility for my life. You see, if you are disconnected or feel disconnected from the divine source, you cannot manifest. The separation is what keeps you from connecting. You can't align yourself. Not taking responsibility for your life and anything in it. And I get letters from people who feel that I shouldn't be saying this because people who have illnesses that they can't do anything about, they don't want to have to take responsibility for them. Or people who have been victims of abuse and things like this don't want to take responsibility for them. Taking responsibility doesn't mean that you feel guilty about anything that has come your way. It means that I have attracted this into my life in some way that I don't understand. It has showed up in my life, and it's my life. And I want to be able to ensure that these things don't show up anymore, and also I want to be able to send them out of my life. But I can't do it if I don't assume a kind of responsibility for them. No guilt. And the fourth one is, I take on no guilt. And to feel worthy, you don't take on guilt. just taking on this sense of responsibility. If I get anything in my body, that if it's a hernia, if it's an ache, if it's a pain, if it were a cancer, if it were arthritis, if it's I can't sleep, if it's a cold, if it's a backache, if it's a headache, whatever it is, I am going to say there's something in me that has attracted this. Rather than, I don't know how this happened, I'm just a victim. These kind of things happen. We live in a carcinogenic world, and these kind of things just happen. It's like the minute that you take responsibility for it, you connect to the divine source, which can heal it. The minute that you say, I had nothing to do with this, then you put that barrier up there, and you're disconnected from the healing of it. So I'm not talking, I want to reemphasize, I'm not talking about feeling guilty about it. I'm talking about saying, it's here, I've experienced it, I can do something with it, I can either go back to that stage of being an athlete and being a warrior and say, it's all in my ego, or I can do something profound about it, which is to say I can teach and become a statesman and a spiritual being by teaching others how to avoid having this happen. It came to me for a reason. I don't have to understand it, but I take responsibility for it. My dear friend Louise Hay had cancer. She was raped when she was a child. She had cancer of the cervix some 15 years later, saw a connection between the hostility and the anger that she had between the rape and this cancer that showed up and all of this anger that she had carried toward this event, for, and said that when she was told she had the cancer, she took responsibility for it in that moment. She said, I carried that hatred and anger and bitterness around in that chakra of my body for that many years, and I am not going to carry it around any further. I'm not going to continue to be victimized. And that was the healing that took place for her, and she writes about it, and You Can Heal Your Life. No guilt, no abdicating the person who was responsible for it and saying, oh, it wasn't their fault. None of that. No removal of the punishment that the person deserves for that kind of conduct. None of that. Simply taking responsibility and saying, I now connect to whatever it is that's in my life, and I no longer am going to carry around the anguish and the guilt there, any place in my life. As soon as you do that, you honor your worthiness to receive the healing, to receive the abundance, to receive the love that might have been missing from your life. In A Course in Miracles, there are 483,364 words. How do you like that? I counted them. You talk about doing your homework, huh? 483,364 words in A Course in Miracles. That's almost 500,000 words. And the word beware appears once. One time. And here's what it says. Beware of the temptation to see yourself unfairly treated. Beware of the temptation to see yourself unfairly treated. It is a prescription for disaster, for guilt. The fifth and final affirmation or attitude to create for ourselves a sense of being worthy is to have congruency in your life. Congruency. I understand the importance of harmony between my thoughts, my feelings, and my behaviors. Very often, most of the problems that we face as people come from our inability to have congruency or harmony exist between what I think, what I feel, and how I behave. I may think one thing, I may feel something else, and then behave in a different way. And to have a congruency is to honor your worthiness. Virtually all addictions come from an incongruency. I have a thought about one thing, I feel something else, and then I behave in a different way. And that incongruency is what keeps us from feeling worthy. The final point I'd like to make on this feeling worthy and honoring your worthiness to receive is the need to unbond yourself from your wounds. If I stood up here and were to cut my hand, and then you were to look at my hand and just watch it, you would see that in a very short time, the wound would close up. If it stayed open, what would happen is that the disease process would set in, there would be sepsis or disease, there would be infection, and if I continued to keep it open by just pushing it open, making sure that it didn't close, I would eventually die. The organism couldn't live, because the natural tendency of a wound is for it to close up and heal. Now, when we get into the spiritual dimension and the psychological dimension, what happens is that we get wounds from our childhood and from our past. We were only children, we were abused, we were abandoned, we had in-laws that were a certain way, or parents that were a certain way, we had alcoholics for parents, we had to be put into orphanages, we were around drug addiction, we were poor, we were rich, whatever it is. We have all of this stuff in our past, and what happens is that we bond to it. And we use these wounds of our past for attention. We use these wounds of our past for pity. And very often we lead with these wounds. So that when I introduce myself, it isn't very long before someone knows that I'm the child of an alcoholic, or that I was an alcoholic myself, or that I was abandoned, or I was abused, or whatever. And we keep hauling out these wounds. And one of the reasons we don't heal in our lives and we don't manifest in our lives is because we are attached to these things in our past, rather than saying, whatever it is that happened to me, whatever lesson I had to learn from it, I got it. I've got the lesson. And now that I have the lesson, I no longer want to be attached to it and have that venom continue to pour through me and keep me from healing. So I let go of that. And most people whose lives are not filled with the things that they would like to see manifested for themselves are experiencing this because they're back there hanging on. How can you possibly talk to me when this is what happened to me when I was a child? How can you possibly say these things to me when don't you know what I've been through? You hear this, and if you don't do it with yourself, you do it with others. And if you don't do it with others, you do it with yourself. It's backwards and forwards all the time. And it comes from this sort of hallucination that we have that says, I and everybody else is entitled to a perfect pain-free childhood. And the fact is that whatever you needed to go through in your life in order to get the lessons of why you're here, you went through them. And all of those things, as you look back on them, you can either take them and say, they taught me how to be stronger, or you can say, poor me, and lead with them and keep opening that wound. And if you do, you'll eventually keep yourself from ever feeling worthy. So that's the third principle for manifestation. The idea that I am worthy, that I deserve it, that I am a divine child of God, that I have the proper attitudes in place to allow this free flow of energy into my life. Thank you.
This is the end of side 5. Side 6 is already queued up for your listening.